Welcome to the Beat House. Jeff here.
Chris here.
Chris, I am furious.
About?
Last week, we did the second part of our AI episode.
Yeah.
And you will recall, none of the AIs did great.
Well, yeah, I'm not happy with them. They're good if you want to get into it, but not for a recipe.
But if you recall, we said that Grok, of all four of them, was generally the best
of the
four bad options.
Yeah.
It wasn't great,
but
it was better than the others. And it had a few instances where, like, the betterness was striking, right?
Yeah.
Between when we recorded that episode and when we posted that episode, did you hear the news about Grok?
No.
The image generation, people have figured out, they can take a picture of a woman wearing clothing.
Oh, I have heard about this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And say, hey. Alter it to whatever.
Yeah. Grok, can you make her, wearing lingerie
or something see-through? Or something
horrible.
Yeah, that's...
And Grok doesn't know the difference between, whether these women have consented to do this or whether these women are of majority age.
Yeah, that kind of pissed me off, too, when I heard about it. Got it.
And then their whole thing of this, like, for the longest time, up until, like, I think yesterday, even after that episode had dropped, no one was saying anything other than, well, boys will be boys. And then the solution that the company put out was, okay, well, this is a problem. So here's how we're going to solve this. Image generation is only for people that pay for the service. Which is not a solution.
That's not a solution.
So
that's definitely not a solution.
The closest thing we had to a best option, still not a good option, but the closest thing we had to a best option is
we don't recommend it.
Yeah,
don't use that.
We didn't recommend it before. I especially don't recommend it now because
yeah.
It's privacy and it's just
shitty behavior. I'm going to call a spade a spade. It's just horrible behavior.
Yeah, no,
you lack morality, you lack conscience. But bottom line. We do not endorse any of the AIs we used.
No.
It was simply, the question came up, what if I got a recipe off an AI?
Mm-hmm.
So we went there, and that's what we did, and don't do that.
And I think the major reason Grok did as well as it did is because it was the one that says, hey, that hydrometer thing, you should really have that.
And that was the major thing.
Gravity, you should use that. Don't use pounds.
But still. Okay, yeah, I heard about that, and... Didn't know. I thought there was something new because things change so fast.
Yeah, 2026 is off to a heck of a start.
Heck of a start. What a kind way of saying that. Thank you so much for that. And I'm the optimist. Okay. Let's start with this show.
Yes.
But sum up that little blurb there, that little rant. Don't use AI for this.
Don't use AI.
Talk to somebody. Talk to Bacchus. Talk to anybody.
Send us a message. Read a book. You would do better to browse around a bunch of different random websites and,
YouTube will help you more.
No joke.
Okay. First thing, thank you for all the listeners.
Yes. You guys tune in week after week. We get emails from you. We get comments on our Facebook posts and stuff when we drop the episodes. And it's so nice to have people listening and getting use out of the content we're putting out here.
Yeah. And, the feedback really... makes us feel like we're doing something worthwhile.
Right.
And I really appreciate it.
Yeah. No, the interaction with you guys is the best. And it's just a icing on the cake getting to do this week after week and getting to help people out with that. So We appreciate you guys tuning in. Like I say so many times before, I get to see the numbers such as they are, we can get metrics on the way podcasts are recorded and things like that. And I get to see those numbers climbing right before Christmas. We had a ton of way more views or listens than we usually get.
That was so nice.
And
hopefully we can keep this going.
Part of me realized that might have been you going back and re-listening to a bunch of episodes.
That could have been me.
But, yeah.
But nonetheless.
I still think there were a number of you guys tuning in that week and just, getting some content out and entertaining yourselves with the stuff we came up with over the course of the year. So thank you guys
again. Yeah, and again, we have to thank our sponsor, Bacchus and Barleycorn. Mm-hmm.
They are returning for 2026. They are a fantastic resource for the homebrew community, and we're so thrilled to be working with them. I mean, whether you guys need ingredients or equipment or just
information,
some advice, for your product, reach out to them. They are one of the few small businesses that are still in this sphere. So many homebrew stores in communities are closing or have shuttered, and there used to be four or five in the Kansas City
Yeah, I think
area,
there's like
and
them now. I think.
it's them, and there might be a homebrew store in Lawrence again,
Okay.
or Lee Summit, I forget, but it's a
I
pretty.
remember seeing one that had a mark a storefront in Lawrence for a very short period of time, but and I hope they're still around, but I don't know where they are now.
Yeah, no, I heard about the store in Lawrence. I've seen it on Google Maps and stuff, but I've never actually been there because.
I happened to be in Lawrence. I stopped through. This was a while back, and really nice people, really good people. I threw my hat in the ring. I said, "Hey, if you need somebody to, give me a shout or something, give me a call back up a number," but I never got anything. So I don't know what happened.
Well, yeah, and not sure if they're still in business, but I hope they are.
I
I
hope they
mean,
are too, because
this.
Box Buckhorn is our go-to because they literally have everything and they have the passion to help you in every way you need. So, give them a shout. If you want to use our special code of MHP10, get
Save
yourself
you.
10% off online orders.
Their prices are already pretty competitive, but that just kind of sweetens the deal. Maybe it'll help with shipping costs and stuff like that, because every little bit helps these days, right?
Yeah, I don't know where your taxes are where you are, but that takes care of most states' taxes right there. A little more.
Kansas is not
Well, now
a
that
low tax state.
Kansas is not it, but
We've had our experiments with previous governors, and
yeah, they were not very good at it. Yeah, but this is not good. Anyway,
No.
but give Box Buckhorn a call, especially if you want to get the good recipes and your equipment. They got fantastic starter kits of various levels. You can get started with just them.
Right. And realistically, guys, like we will talk about we're today we are going to be talking about improving recipes and working through recipes and things like that. And if you want to make a braggot, the easiest start to making a braggot is to get a good beer recipe and then just add honey. And they have something like 50 different beer recipe kits that can put together for you for a beer. Whether you want to do all grain, extract only, partial extract kind of stuff, your skill level, you can choose and pick and go. Like, that's a great start. Pick a beer style you like, add some honey to it that you think is going to go well with it. You're most of the way done to making a braggot right there.
And like you said, MHP10 will get you that 10% off. And even if you go in the store, if you mention it, who knows? Jake's a nice guy. He'll probably give it to you even then.
Worth a shot, right?
Yeah, worth a shot. Me, I just pay full price because I'm just happy to be there. And it gives me free samples.
The free samples do help. I think I get a discount all the time, but I also think I've been going there for well over a decade now. So, it's, hey, Jeff, how's it going? Hey.
Yeah, well, you've gone there longer, but I'm not sure if I do or not, but I what he gives me a price, I pay
Yeah,
the
no, I haven't asked for a discount in a week and a day, but I also haven't really needed to because they know my business.
Yeah. They got us locked down. The meat of the day from Sap House Meadery.
This is deviant. This has been sitting on my desk for a while. This is honey wine with cherries and pasilla peppers.
Bacilla?
Pasilla.
Bacilla, okay.
This is a 2L, so it's
Okay.
a word of Spanish origin. It's a yeah sound.
I failed Spanish six times, so I'm not going to say that. I know it.
I slept through high school Spanish, but at least I got the double L's or a Y kind of sound.
Ooh, always nice.
Like I said, this has been sitting up in my counter, not my desk, for a while now. It might have been a little more red initially, but it's kind of a nice bright orange kind of
Deep
yeah.
amber, red amber. It's Oh, you can smell that grape, the grape wine.
It's not grapey, it's cherry.
That's cherry? Is that? Hang on.
Well, it's a cherry mead.
Yeah, it is cherry. It smelled grapey to me initially.
It might be a little oxidized because it has been sitting around for a while. And that's my fault. It's been up on a
Well,
high shelf and
I've got wines from 2 years ago, man. I gotta get these things drunk. You might want to expect the delivery.
yeah, the smell of one is the cherry is there. I'm not really smelling much in terms of pepper. Not really smelling much in honey. Flavor-wise, there is some oxidation
A little
going.
bit, yeah, I caught that.
The cherry is light. It's kind of a It's not really semi-sweet. It's kind of off dry.
Not bad.
No.
I mean, if the oxidation wasn't there, I'd like it more.
Yes.
I mean, the oxidation is not something I enjoy at all.
Yeah, no. This is probably shouldn't have not have sat as long as it did, unfortunately.
Well, so we're going to have to start putting a date on all our bottles so we can rotate them out faster.
Probably not a terrible idea, right?
I'm starting to do it with my bottles I make. Instead of having realized, ooh, that's been here a while.
Yeah. And the fruit does not necessarily always, hang out and stay fruity.
I mean, even with the oxidation, even with the fact that the cherry layer is not pronounced by any stretch, I don't taste any peppers.
Pepper is, you can get a little bit of a tingle, and this is a pasilla pepper, which is not a strong pepper in the first place. So that said, as long as this has been sitting with the cherry kind of flavor being a little oxidized, it wouldn't surprise me if the capsaicin that was in here has kind of mellowed out a lot too. I think that is the nature of how capsaicin kind of sits and mellows in a bottle over time.
So my spicy meat that I have in a box at home can get better.
I might. I've got a bottle of spicy sitting over here on the stuff that's on option to drink. So maybe we'll try that in a few months to see if it hasn't chilled out some.
Oh my gosh.
Then again, we had that taste test episode where
I about died.
The spicy mead that was real spicy. And I don't know how old that one was.
Yeah, that was in the 12-ounce bottle.
Yeah, that was a beer bottle size. Yeah,
Oh my gosh. Oh, when I took a slug of that, I thought, oh my gosh, this is how my income comes. Whew. Anyway, so we'll give it a whirl. At least I have advanced notice this time.
Right.
Supposed to be spicy. Anyway, I'm not a fan of this particular thing, because it's old.
Yeah.
Am I going to finish the bottle with, Jeff?
Yeah.
It's not undrinkable. It's just not as pleasant as I like it.
Probably would have been better if we got to it a year ago, but it is what it is.
Anyway, onward.
So, Chris, this week we're going to talk into helping our audience become better mead makers. And, we've talked last year, we had three different episodes where we released an 8%, a 12%, and a 16% mead recipe.
Yeah.
And in all those cases, we basically did just a traditional mead with those.
Mm-hmm.
The end goal was, we're going to make an alcoholic beverage. We're going to target this percentage, and we're going to use honey as our primary fermentables. There are differences in terms of what you need to do as far as, you need to feed more nutrient. You probably at this level want to split up the nutrient and use more of a staggered nutrient approach kind of a thing. But otherwise we didn't go into a lot of detail on, okay, well, you've got these done.
Now what?
What do you do now?
Okay.
And for developing your own recipes, how do we take those basic recipes we gave you and do more with them? Right?
And here you go. When I make a fruit mead, I think Jeff does it too.
Mm-hmm.
Our fruit syrup, I use a syrup. I've used whole fruit. I've used mashed fruit. I've used all these different, use them straight off the vine and, simmered into, to remove the pits and all that. But I will put it in primary.
Generally, yeah. And I think we talked a little while ago on the ginger episode, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. about the big episode that Garrett from Man Made Meat did, where he put fruit in primary versus fruit in. He said secondary. It felt a little bit more like that right before bottling kind of thing from the way he was talking about it. But
we'll call it secondary. Yeah. That's what he called it.
And there were some surprises in there as far as, what tasted better in primary versus secondary. And granted, that was all just him and I think four different other people making subjective opinions about it.
And that's fine.
It's
not a huge base, but, you get some ideas.
Right. That might be a useful reference to people that are trying to figure out, hey, do I want to just put this all in up front? Do I want to wait and put this in a secondary? But for the most part, I try to put fruit into primary because fruit has sugar in it, right?
And I want that sugar taken care of.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sugar is not necessarily something that's bad when we're back sweetening it, but we want it to get integrated into the flavors.
If you put it in secondary, I learned this really early. If I'm putting my fruit in secondary, I'm playing with my sweetness,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what's going to happen. And I want more control over how sweet I want it from when I finish to bottling.
Right.
That's why I do my back sweetening at the end. That's why I put, the fruit in the beginning.
Right. Well, and more often than not, when you're putting fruit in the beginning, if you're putting fruit into the beginning of an already mixed up must, you're diluting your gravity doing that.
A lot.
Because the fruit almost inevitably has more water than sugar in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's something we want to account for. We're going to we're going to basically replace part of our volume of water with some volume of fruit, and then we're going to adjust the total sugar volume accordingly.
Yeah, and to let you know what I do for you people listening, when I make it, I mix my honey in. I put my water, my fruit syrup, and my all at the same time and mix it. I haven't added my must yet. The yeast and nutrients are not in there yet. Then I'll take my gravity read. Because then I have a reasonably accurate point of what I can expect for my alcohol at the end of it. I can do my math right to then and there. So do you do anything different, Jeff?
Not really. No. What I'll do is I will put in, usually I will put in, I keep saying, hey, I have a target gravity that I'm putting honey into, right? But I know based on, you know, experience and careful guesstimation that, okay, if I want to get this gravity level, I can start with about 2-ish pounds of honey per gallon and then work from there. And so I can kind of bulk estimate how much I'm going to need. Mm-hmm. I'll start with that. I'll start with the fruit and I'll start with most of the water. And then I'll fine tune it from there. I'll add the honey that I'm going to need. I'll top it off with water as I go. But most of everything is going in there right up front.
Before and, yeast or right, nutrients.
Before yeast, before nutrients. And I will fine tune based on that once I've got all of the fruit, the bulk of the honey, and the bulk of the water. That little extra honey or water can make the difference for those last few points of gravity to make everything copacetic.
Yeah.
And make it ever whatever I'm looking for.
Yeah, I will tell you that, you know, of the two of us, Jeff is more precise than I am. I think that's been stated before, or at least implied pretty heavily before. Even I, when making mead, I will pull a cup of liquid out of what I've mixed with my gravity to add my yeast and nutrients to initially. So I'm not even that little bit, because I know it's unnecessarily tight. I get it. But if I can get it started there, I'll get it started there.
Usually I will rehydrate just in a, you know, a quarter cup of slightly warm water, right? And then if it's a larger batch or a higher gravity batch, I'll pull some of my mead yeast and kind of do the, you know, you add, what is it? If you've got a quarter cup, you add basically an eighth of a cup of the must and let that ferment and then add another eighth of a cup and kind of just temper it like you're tempering eggs into custard or something like that in cooking for those of you that are, you know. That said, you know.
Since we have people that do the centigrade thing, I generally do it about 80, 85 degrees.
Right, yeah.
Fahrenheit, which is anywhere from 26 to 29 degrees centigrade.
Yeah, and it's 80 is a good like target number for me. I'll go as, you know, maybe I'll go as low as 76, maybe I'll go as high as 84, but 80 is where I'm shooting.
Yeah, 80 is where, you know, I just want the yeast to feel warm and comfortable when I start.
Just a little extra metabolic jolt.
Yeah.
Woke up and get them happy. And, you know, again, if we're using a higher gravity, refer to the recipes we posted before, but gopher is generally a good thing to include with that rehydration if you're going into a higher gravity must, because they need a little extra help.
Yeah, and saying that, when we put our must in, I also put in my peptic enzyme.
Yes.
I'll put in my gopher. I'll put in my whatever.
Yeah, the rouge booster.
Rouge booster. I mean, if it's a red fruit and you want the color to stay, I'll put the rouge in, you know, rouge booster in.
So or OptiRed.
OptiRed. Yeah, I've used OptiRed.
I use both. Yeah.
But, you know, but I'll put all of the additive, you know, powders in initially, even if I'm step feeding.
Yeah, the nutrient and the other adjuncts like the OptiRed or the Rouge Boost or whatever, those are very different reasons to include. So, the nutrient we put in staggered amounts, basically to prevent the yeast from, like, doing the small child on sugar rush kind of a thing.
And then go to sleep.
And then it goes too hot, and it kind of crashes out.
Yeah,
early.
We're just trying to keep things moving in the right direction.
Yeah, if you keep it, you know, you stagger that out, you get a nice even flow of your fermentation. You have less problems.
Yeah, and as odd as it sounds, having it just consistently fermenting makes a smoother product. It's weird, but it works.
The same way with, you know, you try to find somewhere to ferment that is relatively dark and relatively stable as far as temperature.
Yeah.
You know, if you can avoid spikes and falls, you can avoid a lot of just weird stuff getting
weird occurring. Effects. Yeah.
In that ferment process. Because you know, if you've got a sunny room in your house that gets to, you know, a high temperature in the middle of the day when there's, you know, bright light coming in through the window, and then it crashes at night when it's cold out because there's not a lot of, heating and cooling, that temperature is going to affect the metabolism of your yeast too.
Yeah.
It just is.
So, be aware. I mean, keep it, it doesn't have to be ideal per, it should be at this little, this short, 70 to 75 degree range while it's fermenting. Yeah. Just make sure it doesn't fly out, beyond, don't drop to 60. Don't drop to 90. Don't jump to 90. Just keep it reasonably even and we're fine.
Yeah. Don't keep it near your heat vent so it's getting blasted with 85 degree air every hour or two when it kicks on. And then it's going to be kind of like slowing down the rest of the day.
Should,
a nice closet where it stays at stable temperature is generally, generally right where you want to be.
And I keep it in the middle of a room in my basement or my living room. Mm-hmm. There are vents on the other side of the room. the room stays reasonably consistent, so it works. All right. So now that's how we put our fruit in. Now, now we're going to talk about fruit for a minute here. Fruit depends on the intensity of the flavor.
It really does. And some fruits, we've talked about this a time or two before, but the water content of fruit makes a difference. Mm-hmm. It really does. There are some fruits like raspberries or blackberries that are, comparatively speaking, they're not as
intense
watery as other fruits are. You don't necessarily need a lot of raspberry or blackberry to get the same kind of,
or any of the strong flavored fruits. Mm-hmm. But peach, strawberry is kind of in the middle somewhere.
Oh, strawberry is on the weaker side.
It's on the weaker side, watery, but it's strong. But honestly, with a strawberry, you're tasting sweetness more than you're tasting strawberry.
Yes, and for a lot of fruits, that the sugar content of the fruit is an integral part of the flavor all by itself. It doesn't taste right if it's not sweet.
Yeah. So, which is why I like using make the sweet meats. And that, and whether you like sweet, dry, it's all on you. This is me. Okay. If you're getting strong berry flavors, blackberry, blueberry, raspberry, you can get away with smaller amounts of the actual fruit or fruit syrup.
Versus, stone fruits, peaches, plums, things like that, they are very watery and the flavor is not as intense, generally speaking. So,
and therefore, more.
You just want to add more ahead of time.
If you're going to go all the way down to the bottom of the rung, we're talking about watermelon, cantaloupes, and melons. We're not sure what you'd get if you get a pure slush slurry of just the fruit without any other water and throwing the must in.
I have previously presupposed that, hey, if we're going to do a watermelon mead, maybe we start with watermelon, like we juice a watermelon, and then we freeze distill that juice so that there's just less water overall, and we try making that into a mead, because there is a lot of water content in it.
Still not adding water. I mean, make a pureed watermelon, a bunch of watermelons, I'd say.
Right.
And then distill it down to whatever size you want to make it, and then just use that.
Use the freeze-distill process to get some of the water out of everything else in the juice.
Because if you used pureed watermelon to make a mead, you're not going to taste the water.
I'm pretty sure you wouldn't. No.
You'll think it's a traditional, and maybe slightly sweeter, but you're not going to catch much.
And all the pinkish-reddish color of the flesh, that color, would probably drop by the time you get out of
practice. If I can't get rid of a strawberry, and that happened, when I finished my strawberry, my glorious strawberry mead was the color of a traditional.
Yeah.
A pale amber. It was depressing almost.
And this is one of the things we can talk about with fruit, especially. Like, the adjuncts that we can add. Obviously, almost any kind of fruit, I would throw in some pectin enzyme, right? Because there is, even strawberries, like when you're making strawberry jam, you have to add pectin to get it to set right, usually. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's been my experience the few times I've made strawberry jam. But
yeah.
There is still a little bit there, and it can impede getting a nice, clear, attractive-looking mead, if that's your goal. And if it's not, it's not. It's not a big deal. But I'll usually throw some in there. Another thing that we talked about before was like OptiRed or the Rouge Boost. Mm-hmm. Those are different chemicals with different purposes, but both of those do tend to promote color stability in a mead.
And when I first heard them, I thought it was color stability for after you bottle. No. I learned otherwise.
Though they are meant to interact with the yeast as it's fermenting, and they do nice things for you. If memory serves, the Rouge Boost is a tannin product, but the OptiRed is more of a, like, it's a yeast product derived from yeast, so they have different sources, they have different purposes that they both combine and do nice things for you. Another thing that I've heard, played with a little bit, probably should play with a little bit more, but apparently there are some yeasts like RC212 that do more to promote color stability. They may not give you the same kind of the light yeast character you get from like a 71B or like a QA23, but
Yeah. Now, mind you guys, if you have questions about the yeast, you can always email us, call Box and Barley Corner, your local group. They can tell you the characteristics of yeast.
Right.
And you can look them up online. It's not hard. However, they're not necessarily on the package.
Right. No, one of the easiest ways to find this information though is just to go to like Laubmann's website and check out their white papers.
Yeah.
If memory serves, they have comparison charts with all these different like yeast qualities and things like that. And there are a number of people on Facebook and Reddit and Instagram and all these different places that you can go to talk about mead making where they'll do comparison charts between like the Laubmann products and other the other wine yeast manufacturers' products.
We use a lot of Laubmann, so the other names don't jump to our mind, but nonetheless, you can find out. And if you're looking for a good fruity wine, go with a fruity yeast that promotes fruity flavor.
If you're doing something that has a lot of red color and you're looking to hold on to red color, use a red wine yeast.
Use a red wine yeast.
There you go.
And we've said this before, the difference between a wine and a mead is the honey.
Yeah, that's the where does the sugar come from?
Yeah.
Is it a fruit sugar? Is it a honey sugar? That's it.
That's really
That's
the only difference.
yeah.
We are making, mead is called honey wine. We're making wine, just we like mead more.
And frankly, a lot of the modern mead recipes got their start from winemakers that also had the ability to, they had some honey sitting around so they could make mead too.
Yeah.
We do not have the historical, except in places like Poland and Ethiopia, we don't have that historical, like, full history and process being, added to generation after generation like we do with beer or with wine. And so a lot of this stuff we're kind of making up as we go, and we're kind of just doing the experiments and figuring out ourselves. That's
Nothing wrong
fine.
with any of that. It works really well. Now, again, your fruit,
Cheers.
the intensity of your fruit flavor should dictate, like for strawberry, or not strawberries, for like blackberries, raspberries, cherries, things like that, blueberries, 2 pounds would probably do you
Probably enough,
per
yes.
gallon. The medium grade, 3, maybe 4 pounds. The lower ones, there's no way you're going to put enough fruit flavor in there on the lower end flavors. I mean, okay, if you're going to make a peach mead, I recommend use standard yellow peaches, not the white peach. The white peach is much milder.
Yes.
So if you want that flavor, and there are like Antinole, there are natural flavor additives you can use. Have them at hand. So just in case it didn't get quite as much as you wanted, it's not a bad batch. It just needs to be tweaked.
Well, and there is no harm in, let's say, hey, we're going to put 5 pounds of peaches in a primary. And when we get to secondary, we taste it and we go, hey, this still doesn't taste peachy enough. There's no harm in putting another 2 or 3 pounds per gallon in secondary to get more peach flavor out of it.
Yeah, and that's fine. You're still fermenting. You're still, give it some time. Let it do its. Bottom line, you have to keep in mind what you want firmly and act accordingly. Now, that's my that. Do you have any more about fruit at this time?
The other thing I will throw in there, we talk about adding fruit, and we could do more with fruit in other times. It's not going to necessarily change. It's not going to be a major part of the fermentation process, but for example, right now one of the things in front of us is my wife's sangria mead, which we start with a blackberry mead base and add like a gallon's worth of a Merlot wine kit to get that kind of mostly fruit but a little wine. When we get to the finishing step, though, we'll add fruit juices to that instead of adding more honey, or in addition to adding more honey for that back sweetening step. So, like the frozen fruit concentrates you get at the supermarket, we'll use some of those, like a little tropical, maybe a little lime, maybe a little pineapple, and just use that fruit concentrate, the fruit juice, things like that in the back sweetening step. That's another way you can add fruit flavors, and it can be very fun.
And and for a correction on my own strawberry, I went into my chocolate strawberry mead. My correction was using freeze-dried strawberries.
Yes.
And I can't remember if it was 800 or 900 grams of it. It was insane level.
And 800 or 900 grams is not a lot of grams, but when you think about the fact that these are freeze dried and there's just not a lot to the volume of
that was what... one small bag. It wasn't that big, I swear. And I threw those in, and I got the color back.
Mm-hmm.
B, I got the strawberry flavor in there. It wasn't enough, but I wasn't willing to spend more money for it, to be honest. But I got one I was happy with. And then we went to secondary. Anything else for primary before I go on?
I've already skipped ahead from secondary into like right before bottling was what I was talking about.
Yeah, okay, well, here we are. Now, in secondary, this is when I add my spices. This is when I add my, this is when I add everything else to make me happy with it. For example, if I'm adding spices for like my pumpkin, my apple pot, my apple cider, pumpkin, apple pie meat, my apple pie meats.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is when I'm going to add my cinnamon, my clove, my nutmeg, all these things.
Right.
And because Jeff taught me this, my time limit is 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, you have to take that out before 2 weeks hits.
Generally speaking, 2 weeks is a good, it's hard to overdo it on 2 weeks. But once you hit about 2 weeks, and this depends very greatly on the spices, the size of the spice, and whether you got it like crushed up or kind of like a rough grind or in whole, like sticks of cinnamon. But once you get into about that 2 week mark is when you start risking the good stuff that you've been trying to get out of it, whether it's, you know, the cinnamon spiciness or the vanilla or all the happy stuff, and you're starting to get the other stuff.
Yeah, that, it's like a vegetable, green vegetable.
Kind of like, yeah, if raw green peppery kind of a flavor.
Which you don't want.
It's just not an attractive.
Now, for me personally, what I generally do, unless it's something that's pretty open, I will do a rough grind. Just chomp it up a little bit in, you know, with a spoon and something, just crunch it into pieces,
right,
that you would never eat them, but I just want more things exposed.
And that's generally a good way to do it. You want more surface area exposed.
Mm-hmm.
But you want it still large enough particles that it will be filtered through a bag, because usually we're talking about using those little linen or the mesh bags,
the mesh bags
for spices and stuff at your homebrew store.
Now, regardless of how you get your fruit or spice in, God's sakes, we've said it many times before, please use a bag. I've done not bag before. I had regrets, lots of regrets.
So the other advantage of using a bag is just making it easier to pull it at 2 weeks in case. And hey, if you don't have the level of spice you need after 2 weeks, it's probably a good idea to just replace it and add more stuff rather than just try and push it, because you're going to get more of those green vegetal flavors than you are more cinnamon, vanilla, whatever you're throwing in there. Just add more and give it another 2 weeks on new stuff.
And this isn't just your, you know, the spice you have on your shelf or gotten from, you know, Bacchus or wherever you get it from. This is your cacao nibs.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I make my chocolate for my chocolate strawberry chocolate banana. This is where I put it in.
And having the bag lets you just, you know, you grab the little piece of unwaxed dental floss you've got hanging in there to keep it accessible. You pull that little bag and you're done.
Yeah.
If you're using ground up spices,
you're not done.
The only way you can get those off is to rack to a different container. And even then you might have a couple little floaties come along for the trip.
If you want to get all of them out, you're
everything filtering. Settles with the trout at the bottom.
Yeah. If you want to get it all out when you left it loose in there at ground, you're filtering. And you're going to through a lot of filters, man, because that stuff's going to go through a lot of them.
I mean, I have seen people take... Do you know what a hop spider is?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some people, when they do a rack to from one bucket to another, they'll take the end of their siphon tube and they'll stick it into a hop spider, which is just like the steel mesh.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they have the big gross material like fruit fiber and bits of spice or hops or something like that, it catches in the hop spider, and then they can just lift the hop spider out and they've got mostly clear secondary.
If you want that another works. Tool to use, fine. Use a mesh
Get a bag.
Bag.
And start. Get Bags a bag. Are so easy.
It's so cheap, and it's just such an easy way to make sure it's easy.
You throw it into your washing machine without, like, you know, the weird fabric softeners and crap, and just run a quick cycle and you could reuse it.
I don't even use detergent. I just throw it in with hot water. I've never had a problem.
We, We use a non-scented, non-fragranced detergent, so I'm relatively confident with that that I can use it and reuse it, and everything's gonna be fine. But that's
But but do yourself a favor. Use a bag. All right, for spices, this is my vanilla for my blackberry vanilla goes in at the very end when I'm doing back sweetening.
Well, and are you using whole vanilla beans, or are you using your vanilla tincture?
I'm using a vanilla tincture I've made. I've had two of them going. One of them I started in 2019. I still have it going.
Yes.
I mean, when I pour off enough of it, I'll just restock the alcohol level in it. It's got like eight vanilla beans in it right now
Right.
that I split.
Well, and I think as an approach to adding spices, secondary is where you want to do it. If you're using whole spices, or like we say whole spices, but we're talking ground or the actual spice itself, and it's whatever your long-term storage media is. If you're using a tincture like the vanilla, or I've got we talked before, I'm probably going to be adding a sweetgrass tincture to my appley Polish mead here.
Okay, cool.
And that's, again, that's a tincture that's based on, I can't remember if I used, I think I just used a vodka with that, but I know for your peanut tincture you used like
I used Everclear.
like a 90% something
Yeah, I
like
used a
that.
really strong one. And it worked. We remember that. It was tough, but it worked.
But once you get into that tincture phase, there's not really much for the yeast to interact with at that point. Basically, you've got the flavor in an alcohol solution, so there's no reason to want to put it in early. That's generally, that will be a finishing step right before bottling when you're doing, you stabilize it, you back sweeten it to the level you like, you add, any different adjuncts like tinctures and things like that to get the last level flavor. And that's where it kind of hits its final phase of development, right?
And then you'll hit it with your back sweetening to whatever level of, desert dry to candy sweet you want. And time to bottle.
Yeah, no, the tinctures I think are, they're in with the back sweetening, because I've definitely had the experience where, I thought I had enough vanilla, for example, and then I back sweetened it and I went, I could really use a little more vanilla. So this is, like I said, it's, this is where the final development of that flavor comes from, because it's,
We've gone through my Earl Grey
yes.
Moonlight, and we both agreed after a little while I should have put a lot more tea in that. And it was, yeah.
Well, and yes and no, because I think we had plenty of vanilla in that tea, but I wanted more bergamot to like
Well,
interact
it
with it.
was the
And
I didn't put actually put any vanilla in. It had a vanilla flavor, but didn't put any in.
right, it was just that particular brand of
Yeah,
the
it was a,
tea.
it had a vanilla cream notes
Right. And
in
I
the.
don't know how they got that into the tea, but it was just the tea. I was of the opinion, I remember, that some of the Earl Grey Moonlight would have been nice, but with some regular Earl Grey, so you get more of the bergamot notes.
Which is the next step in the, when I go into making that London Fog one I talked about.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
We tried that not long, like a few months after I made it, and then we tried it almost a year later. The bergamot has diminished even more. So yeah, we, more bergamot.
Yeah. And that's unfortunately the spices you're using. Bergamot may be one of those that kind of settles out a lot easier than others.
Like the pepper in this wine we're drinking
I
now.
think so. Yeah. I'm not sure vanillin settles as
Much?
readily as those do.
I don't know because I don't generally keep my black widow doesn't stick around long.
This is one of those things that you're going to have to kind of figure out as you go, and this is part of, just because you've pulled a good recipe one time doesn't mean you're done developing that recipe. One of the things that I like the idea of is, and I've talked about this before, having like a spate of my own house recipes where there's, you come over to my house for a dinner party or something, you can always bet there's going to be, Jeff's, like the Jeff's Whip Beer Bracket. I'll always have a bottle of that available if you're into that, because it's one of my favorite brackets I've ever made. It's also like the first bracket I ever made, but it just came out really nicely.
And then, but he, but Jeff and I, what I refer to Jeff and I's recipes is they are living recipes. We're going to tweak them forever.
Well, and this is one of the reasons that we didn't used to publish the recipes when it was like, me and JD and Ryan doing this, was because JD was of the opinion that, hey, we're not a recipe show, we are a idea show. We haven't stopped being an idea show, but there was an understanding, I think, and this goes back to Mississippi Chris, where he was like, I published this recipe and people were saying, oh, well, I made this change and this change and this change, and I didn't get a result that I liked. Like, and his opinion was, well, yeah, because you made this change and this change and this change. So what were you expecting? I am willing to say, hey, make those changes, but,
don't expect it to be the same thing when you're finished.
Right.
If you're going to tweak a recipe, don't expect the same recipe. You made a new recipe. It's okay.
But there is a value in that to changing things and trying different things, and variations on a theme are incredibly valuable for learning this hobby. Maybe, hey, we're going to make a cherry mead. Let's use Bing cherries. And then next time we'll use,
Montmorency cherries.
Yeah, exactly. Cherries. We'll figure something out. We'll get some of those cherries that Ken Schramm has been raising up, and we'll use those. The Charbeak or something like that.
Yeah, oh, man. I one of my bucket list hopes and dreams meat is to use chocolate cherries from the coffee cherries from the coffee plant. Coffee is from the seed inside the cherry. Mm-hmm. I want to use the cherry.
That could be interesting. I think I've had something. I can't remember. But I have had a mead somebody made with the apple part of a cashew.
That would be cool.
The fruit part that comes with the cashew, because the cashew has a nut. The cashew is a nut, right?
Yeah.
And it has a fruit part around it, or like above it, hanging in the plant. And it's not a popular flavor. It doesn't really grow great in the United States, if I'm not remembering correctly. And it doesn't store very well. So it's just not something that's been on our shelves a lot. Mm-hmm. But I had somebody that had some harvested in another country and made a mead with it. And it was pretty nice.
Yeah. See, I mean, will a coffee cherry have the caffeine? Probably not.
Might.
But maybe a little.
Probably not as much as, if you've
roasted and ground the beans.
Right, exactly.
This is one of the things that I want to do, because the cashew fruit, the coffee cherry, mm-hmm. these things, until I realized they were a fruit, too, it never crossed my mind. We have had coffee meads here.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not, and as a non-coffee drinker, they're not bad.
Right.
I'll flat out, they're not. What about the rest of it?
Yeah. Well, and you think about culinarily speaking, we all know nutmeg, right? You can find, especially when we were talking about Christmassy stuff, mace is another common ingredient. Same plant, just a different part of that. Nutmeg we have in spades. You can go to any grocery store and find whole or ground, whatever. Finding mace, real tricky.
A little tougher.
And it's the same plant.
Yeah.
They, by definition, they basically have to be harvesting mace when they harvest nutmeg. We just don't use it. And it's just not part of the milieu of modern culinary experience in America. So you just don't find it in stores. But if you go to specialty spice stores, you can absolutely find it.
It's from the outer covering of the nutmeg.
Yeah.
So, the reason you don't get as much of it is because, there's not as much of it there to get.
Well, and I imagine that it is not as stable a storage thing, because the nutmeg is basically like the seed in the middle of a plant that you dry out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can grind it or you can crush it or whatever. But at as a dried seed, for lack of a better term, at the center of the plant, once it's dry, it's relatively shelf stable, and relatively the potency of the flavors doesn't really diminish much over time, versus that outer covering probably has to be dried a little more thoroughly, probably has to be processed in a way that makes it useful. So it's probably only useful as powder. You have to grind it or something to use it, because I imagine it's just a fibrous material kind of thing. So it's probably just not as attractive and useful. And it's probably a case where, in ye olden times, so to speak, whenever it was being used, whether it was 100 years ago, 200 years ago, up through whenever we figured out that, hey, this nutmeg stuff is pretty tasty. Grind a little on your eggnog or whatever. They probably had both. They probably had both available, but nutmeg is just the more stable option. And so it's just been the one that people defaulted to.
Yeah. But mace and nutmeg don't taste the same.
No.
And you make your own choices, guys. But, okay, I'd like to do a couple things with bottling. Are we done with this part?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, guys, if you guys have questions, by all means, call us, text us, whatever. Send us a note, and we'll answer your questions. We want you to know.
So
we want to know, probably.
We've covered fruit. We've covered spices. And if you go through, the BJCP catalog of meads you can make, that in and of itself, you know, we talked about traditionals beforehand. We've talked about fruit meats. We've talked about metheglins, spice meats. You can combine the two and make a fruit and spice meat. You've covered
called a spice. It's called a spice metheglin,
right?
Or a fruit metheglin if you add fruit.
Between just making a traditional, making a melomel, making a spice, or some combination of those, we've covered 75% of the BJCP categories easily. But, you know, that leaves us maybe historicals and brackets. And variations therein and experimentals, which
Experimentals.
broad category, fun category, but
Awesome category, but
you know, there's only,
it's called experimental for a reason.
yeah, it's broad category, like I said. Anyway, yeah, no, I think we can move on from there, because from here we're getting into more, you know, what do you want to do?
Yeah. Okay. Now, from here, you can bottle. And bottling means you just stick it in a bottle, cork it, and you're good to go.
Cork or cap.
Cork or cap, whatever, cap it, cork it. You have two options that jump to my mind right now. A, you can make it bubbly. You can add bubbles.
Right. Carbonation is trickier, and it works better for a low ABV kind of a thing. Think about it. If you go to the store and you buy a beer, 99% of the time, that beer is going to be carbonated, right?
And it's very low alcohol. 3.2 is the 3.2 is a catchphrase.
Right. You know, getting up to 6-7%, you will see a few like barley wines or really high ABV beers that are carbonated, but it's progressively harder and harder to naturally carbonate a beer the more alcohol is already in it. It's just a
And
fact of the matter.
I'm not going to go through the we're not going to go through again. We've gone through this once, at least once before, the ways you can carbonate. But this is where you make the last decision if you want to carbonate or not.
Easiest way to carbonate, if you've got a relatively low ABV meat, is the carb tablets.
Carb tablets, carb tablets.
They are basically, it's a pre-measured amount of sugar, and you'll add one per bottle. It's kind of the no muss, no fuss, as long as you're doing about 12-ounce bottles. That's an easy way to do it.
I know there's a tablet that
Yes.
you can use. I don't carbonate, so I don't know. I
Right.
don't use this.
I think they're just called carbonation tablets or carbonation pills or something like that. And
Okay.
different brands probably have different terms for it, but they are a real simple thing. It literally just looks like
Large
like a
aspirin tablet or.
not even an aspirin tablet. It's more like a little like Werther's Original kind of
Okay.
hard candy kind of a thing.
Or like a Altoid.
Yeah, kind of, maybe a little bit bigger, but yeah, it's literally just crystallized sugar,
Okay.
and it's crystallized sugar and some other, maybe a little bit of yeast nutrient, in a little pill form. Stick one in a 12-ounce bottle and pour on your beer must before at bottling,
And then cap
right? And you let that sit for 2 to 4 weeks, and the little bit of sugar in that pill gets eaten up by the remaining yeast that gets dissolved as carbonation, and then hey, you got a carbonated beverage.
And you be careful when you do that. You'll need to drink this at a reasonably close time, because otherwise,
No,
no. I
not
mean,
necessarily.
will
There's
it?
only so much sugar it can eat.
Okay, good,
Now,
good. I thought maybe it'd just keep going because.
the advantage of those pills is that you have a pre-dosed amount of sugar.
Okay, cool.
And
I didn't realize that part.
another thing you could buy at Bacchus if you're doing a 5-gallon batch of beer is just a little, I think it's around 2 ounces of corn sugar, like very simple sugar, and you can just add that to a 5-gallon batch, stir bottle, and you've got the amount of priming sugar you want for a relatively normal amount of carbonation for beer.
Okay.
Very simple.
So
If
this is
you're going
established
to,
practice.
yes, this is established practice. They've made this relatively foolproof. If you're doing something different than, you know, 5 gallons or 12-ounce bottles, then you got to be a little creative. Here is where opportunity for messing up comes, though. And basically, you can use all kinds of things to prime a meat. You could use fruit juice, and it would be fun. I've had some that my previous co-host Ryan made with like cherry juice as a priming sugar,
Okay.
and that was interesting and nice. But understand, of course, that the amount of sugar you're putting in here dictates the amount of sugar the yeast can eat, therefore the amount of carbonation and pressure. And if you're not careful with this, you can get bottle bombs.
Yeah.
And
And this is what I was worried about. I didn't know if it was pre-measured sugar, so that helps my state of mind.
right, there are things like we've talked about using calculators for figuring out your ABV and things like that. You can go online and put in like priming sugar calculator, and that gives you the amount of sugar based on your ABV and your the volume of meat or beer or what have you. And you can put in, hey, I'm going to add brown sugar to the 6% apple cider. How much do I need to get 2 volumes of CO2, right? Use those calculators.
Yeah,
Know what you're doing.
this is important because at worst case scenario for a bad one, you're going to get a alcohol shower.
I have told you about the bottle bomb I had at my old house. For those that may not have heard the story, it's been a while since I've heard it, and I think this is important. I had put in some bottles that I think I had tried pasteurizing, and I'm not sure I did it very well, or I think I had intended to pasteurize and hadn't gotten around to it. But I had bottled into beer bottles, and I had capped, and I had set them on my kitchen counter right next to my stove, and had gone about my life. And in the middle of the night, after my wife and child had gone to bed,
Yes.
thank God,
Yes.
I was messing around in our TV room next to the kitchen, and I heard a pop, a loud bang sound, and I had no idea what was going on, but I immediately sprang to my feet and went, "What the hell?" Looked into the kitchen and saw a puddle leaking off my counter onto my floor, all over the place. Right next to my stove is where I usually keep, potatoes and onions and things like that in a little basket, right? So the basket was right next to this bottle. There were shards of that brown beer glass embedded deep into an onion that was sitting right next to it. Had that been my wife or my kid
Or you.
or me,
Yeah,
yes.
this is horrible.
This that would have been like ER level, we need help now.
Yeah.
Like internal organs could have been injured, kind of big stuff.
And I've heard stories. I mean, like I said, the best thing is going to happen if it's over carbonated. When you pop the top off, you're in a shower. It's going to shoot out of there. It's going to get everywhere, and you're going to get wet.
To a point.
Worst case, I've had stories of people having full-blown 5-gallon carboys. They could not find a piece of the carboy. It exploded so violently. It wasn't, the stories I've heard, it was in a different room. They heard a big boom. They went and checked, and there was no sign of the bottle. Everything was drenched in whatever was in the bottle. Guys, be careful with carbonation.
You got to be
Follow
careful.
instructions. Use your calculators. Please, for goodness sakes, we do not want you hurt for a hobby.
Yeah. There is
Be responsible, even in the making.
absolutely. There is no hobby worth, losing life or, injuring yourself
Or
permanently.
any level of injury, any, I mean, if it's a paper cut, it's not worth it, man.
No, it really isn't.
But we're telling you this because we want you to be safe. I like still meads. That's my only reason making a still mead. If somebody says I want a carbonated, I'll make them a carbonated mead.
If you really like carbonation, look at getting a carbonation setup, like the CO2 tank, pressure regulator, a keg, a counter pressure beer thing. You're going to come out a few $100 in the front, but A, you're going to be able to fine tune your carbonation level to a level you like. Because
Yeah.
Chris doesn't drink beer, but if you think about the difference in carbonation of like a stout or a darker beer versus a lager, a lager is a lot more carbonated.
Yeah, you'll
A
see a
stout is
very
not.
thin layer of bubbles on top of the stout and such, and a lot thicker head on the lagers.
Right. That's just the style thing, but you can fine tune that with a CO2 tank and a regulator a lot more easily than you can with priming sugar. Just the nature of the beast, right? Plus, it's a lot safer because you know how much CO2 is going into it because it's already in there when you bottle the mead, beer, cider, whatever is stable
And you're done.
because you've stabilized it, and it's not going to get into a bottle bomb situation because it's not going to get any more carbonated.
When?
You're right. If you like carbonated meats, and I like carbonated meats sometimes,
I've
it's
had
not
a few
my
I'd like,
favorite style, but
but it's not my favorite, no. Invest if you want it.
right. This is
It's
a
better for you in the long run.
from a safety standpoint, it's one of those tools that will make a difference and will be useful to you. 100%. 100%.
But there you go. And that we wanted to go over how we make this and how we've seen best results in
Right.
making this.
How to go from a basic recipe and develop it further. And this applies from a basic recipe like one of ours, or from a recipe you found online that you kind of like. But hey, maybe this cherry mead would be good with a little pasilla pepper, like the one we're drinking today.
Or maybe this blueberry mead would be good okay with a little bit of cinnamon. Go wild, man. It's all good. Be safe out there. Carbonation's a dangerous, aspect to me, but I don't like carbonation anyway, so it's not really something I'm worried about.
But if you like it, there are safe ways to do it. There are easy ways to do it. There are a little bit more expensive, but I think a lot better ways to do it. So always choose your own level of involvement. But there are, I think, as a mead maker, there are ways we can kind of fall into a trap of, hey, if I spend X amount of money to do Y amount of stuff, and I, get this fancy new tool that will make better mead. And it's not always the case.
No.
But I think this is one of those times where you can
This
spend the
is.
money, you'll have at least a safer experience, you'll have the ability to fine tune it a little bit more.
It's a better experience.
Right. Not everybody likes carbonated meads. Obviously, Chris is not that big into them. I like them more than most. But if I'm going to make a carbonated mead, I want it to be pretty carbonated because it's going to be light, and the carbonation is going to be pretty freely loose once I open the bottle, unless it's like a Braggot where there's some protein holding on to it. So I want to go heavy with the carbonation, and that just increases the risk of a bottle bomb. To me, going the kegging route and getting all the equipment to do it, properly and safely, easy choice.
Easy choice. Now, we're going to finish off the thing because we did our drawing.
Yes.
It was the beginning of the year, we did our drawing for the two books, the Flavor Bible and Ken Schramm's The Complete Mead Maker. And we got our winners.
Yes. So we need to congratulate Jason on his winner of Ken Schramm's Complete Mead Maker and Jay for his copy of the Flavor Bible. We've reached out to you guys. We will hopefully get those out.
As soon as you get the information to us, we'll get them out.
Right.
But this is on you now, guys. You've got to tell us.
And for those of you that entered and didn't win, we're going to still try and get you some swag or something nice.
Yeah,
We might throw some
we're gonna get,
swag in with those books too.
yeah, we maybe a little bit swag with the books, but we're gonna get you some swag just because you spent the time to talk to us and we appreciate it. We're gonna do this again, though.
Yes,
I want to
absolutely.
do another giveaway. It may be books, it may be something else, but I'm gonna do this again
We'll get
because.
something nice and fun for you guys. We'll just give you a reason to keep tuning in and keep interacting with us just because we like that. Why
Yeah.
not?
So, go over to our meat maker, themeathouse.com, and give us a message at info@meathouse.com.
Info at the
At
meat
the
house.
thank I keep making that mistake. That's on me. Themeathouse.com. And we will give us some ideas if you have them, guys. What would we're probably not going to buy you a complete starting mead maker kit.
Probably not.
Comma. If you can think of some things we will get you, we'll at least keep them in the sit. We'll keep them in mind.
There is all kinds of fun stuff we could be throwing out at you guys, and we're happy to play with those ideas. But we hope you found this useful. We hope this topic is useful. And if there are other topics you want to hear us cover, or you want to take us down a little rabbit hole of, we talked about all this. We didn't even talk about oaking, even though it's kind of
Oh
in the
my
same
gosh, we should do another
spice.
round. We should do a round on oaking.
We've done a round on oaking already, but yeah, we should.
We should go a little bit deeper on that.
Yeah, we should. We should. But did that kind of falls into that spice blend, but it's a little different, and then it's a longer developing kind of thing. But we'll talk about that soon.
There's more information. But hey, guys, have a great time. Happy meeting. And we hope to see you very soon back on the show. Take care.
Night, guys.